This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's the host of To The Point Home Services Podcast, Chris Yano, and I have my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul Redman on. Tall Paul, how you doing, buddy?
Chris, any better I would be you coming off a fresh two week relaxing vacation somewhere in South America where you looked like you just kicked back for a couple
That's
weeks.
Right, man.
So no wonder your energy's so high.
That's right. Peru for 2 weeks. You know what? I learned that my Spanish is still no good. It's no bueno. See what I did there? It's pretty good.
When I saw your pictures and I saw day one, hiking boots, day two, hiking boots, I was like, this is going to be a lot of work. Hiking kids up a mountain.
The fact that I had to buy hiking boots tells you something because I have my Timberlands. I remember I got invited on a hunting trip and I wore my Timberlands and they made fun of me for wearing a pair of Timberland boots. So I bought a pair of Columbia boots. I kind of felt like I was Tall Paul getting ready. I even had a rain poncho.
Did you have a fanny pack though?
I did not have a fanny pack. No, that's where I draw the line.
Then you were not prepared. Welcome back, man. The company survived without you. So apparently you've been listening to the podcast and applying things.
I have been. Yeah. We're having great guests ones we have on today. So I'm extremely excited. And listeners, you are in for a real treat. For those that are listening that attended Rhino X, you got to meet both of our guests on today. One of them has been on before, Mr. Frank DeMarco, a friend of mine for years, came on, told his story. But now we've got Leland Smith in the house. Literally, both of the guys sitting right in front of me. Well, kind of off to the side a little bit, but both sitting in the studio today. And I'm extremely excited and grateful that you took the time to be here because I understand that time is your most valuable asset. And I can appreciate that so much. But I want to go ahead and welcome Frank DeMarco, Leland Smith, Service Champions in the house. Guys, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having us on.
Thank you, sir.
Are you ready for round two, Frank?
I would ask you the same question after an hour and 30 minutes of history last time. I'm not sure if you're ready for round two.
Listen, I'll tell you what, the volume of downloads and streams on that tells the story. So apparently everybody else was cool with it too. Ain't that right, Kyle? Just Kyle in the house. So Leland, but this is number one for you. I'm excited. Yes, I think the listeners are going to be really excited to hear from you and to hear your story and to really not just your story, the story of Service Champions and then kind of beyond. And some of the questions that we've prepared, I think, will give them a really good indication to what you guys are all about, what Service Champions is all about, what Leland Smith is all about.
Right.
The folks that didn't get to come to Rhino X, reaching out to me to give them the video footage of it, I give it to nobody. you had to have been
there.
You
got to come.
That's right.
Yep. And that's the deal. You know. Yep. And so 2022 Rhino X is going to be great. Leland has committed to come back, assuming you'll come with him. For
absolutely.
Geiger has committed. Geiger wants to come in. He had FOMO.
He was missing out. DG was on that. Right. DG was the only one missing up there.
He had FOMO, so he is like, hey, I want to come to that conferencing you did. And I'm like, yeah, we'll invite you back. The only person that hasn't responded to me yet was Goodrich, but I know Ken well enough to know that he ain't going to miss out, so he'll probably be there. But it'll be nice to have Kenny back over and all you guys here. And we'll probably do that late first quarter of next year, something along those lines. And listeners, don't worry. When it comes time, we'll roll it out. It'll sell out quick. We're going to keep it small, kind of like we did last time. I thought that was more meaningful and intimate. But let's go ahead and get into it, Paul. Like I said, usually I ask a bunch of openers or icebreakers and stuff like that. And I'm not going to do that because it's not necessary. We got Leland Smith in the house.
That's right.
So we're going to get right into it. Paul, you want to go ahead and lead Leland into it?
Wow, what an honor.
Thank you, man. You're welcome. You're welcome. Don't mess it up.
I appreciate that. So Leland, thank you for joining us. We're excited to hear your story and share it with our listeners. So why don't you do just that? Why don't you tell us your story? And what we ask every guest is, how did you get into the trades?
Interesting. When I was a younger kid, my father did antique cars and Model A's, Model T's, and I was the only child that he was very sure the hand tools didn't fit in my hands.
I can relate.
Because I wasn't good at it. But long story short, I went to University of Kentucky. I got an accounting job and I knew I wanted to work for myself, but I didn't know what I was going to do. So while I was an accountant, I got my real estate license and realized, okay, that wasn't what I wanted to do. But I would come out to California to visit my brother who was working for my uncle's in plumbing. And when I got back one time, my brother called me and said, why don't you come out to California, work with me with plumbing? Again, tools in the hand, plumbing, okay. But long story short, I did. I came out and worked with my brother, Craig, and he started his company. And I worked for him about a year and a half, and I started my own company at that point.
And what when, what year was that?
I came out in 79 and yeah, 79.
Okay. Okay.
That's when you were born, Chris.
That's when I was born.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was thinking about you.
Appreciate that. Okay. So you started working with your brother at 79. What was the name of the company?
Mine was Allied Plumbing Heating. And then we taught somebody to teach us how to do air conditioning.
Got it. Okay.
So even today, I always tell people I'm the least technical person in the building. I realized when I started my own company and after I caught the second house on fire, I probably wasn't the best plumber that was out there. So I came in the office and let the other people do that.
So that's when you became really self-aware that that might not be for you.
Yeah, I'm more of the office guy. My father was right. Tools don't fit my hands.
Fair enough.
So after that, you know, obviously Allied, we ended up selling it to a consolidator in the late 90s. Worked for ARS for a couple of years, and once my non-compete was up in March of 2000, I started Service Champions.
Wow. So can I back up for a second?
Sure.
So you said you were talking about the consolidation with your brother and with Allied. Because you weren't handy with tools, like Tall Paul, but you did understand the business side of it really well. Like, that's the part you got.
Right.
And how about, was it more of like operations and finance? It was, what was like the more role, the best, like the roles that you took on?
Well, I was an accountant. My father had 5 stores, Smith's Dollar Discount stores, and I worked with him. So I understood the business side. I understood numbers. I was good at that part of it. Like I said, I just wasn't good on the technical side. And, you know, as anything, when you open up a business, you got to start learning. You got to learn. And I'm still to this day learning about what I need to know. And so it was a growing process throughout all that.
Got it. So now we're into 2000, mm-hmm. and Service Champions is alive.
Right.
So let's go from there. Like, how's that start to progress? Because arguably, I mean, South Florida, Phoenix, South Texas, Southern California, South Florida, South Texas, Phoenix, these are extremely competitive and hard markets. So at least you picked an easy one right out of the gate to get after it in Southern California. But let's go ahead and talk about that. So from 2000, what does Service Champions start to morph into, or what's it look like?
Well, I planned a lot because just the name. I wanted to be the champions of service, hence the name Service Champions. And to do that, to have techs that are great, I knew I had to pay the techs better than anybody else in the industry, at least in the area, which I found out later we're paying better than anybody in the industry. And if you pay your techs really well, you can demand that they take care of customers extremely well. And what we always, even to this day, we want them to take care of the customer better than anybody else and a little bit more.
So client fulfillment is absolutely number one.
Right. You've got to find something, and we have it, what we call good deeds for free. We encourage our techs to find something in the house not associated with heating and air conditioning. Do something. Look for a light bulb that's out. Look for batteries for a smoke detector. Bring the garbage cans in. Anything at all. Well, there's hundreds of things these guys do. And we encourage them, and we share those in all of our meetings. And they don't get paid anything for it. But they know if they do that little extra that's different than anybody else out there, that relationship will build with that customer. They'll keep coming back, and they keep coming back. So early on, it was we wanted to pay them the best. We wanted to make sure we gave the best to our customers. And I always said, you never have to worry about the company. If the techs are doing their job, customers are being treated right, we're fine. And that's really where we started. When I started day one, it was just me in the office. Jim Dotson is our top sales guy, and he's still here today after 21 years. Had 2 techs, 2 installers, and that's where we were. And we grew from there.
So you said Jim?
Jim Dotson.
Yeah. So he's been with you 21 years.
Yes, sir.
So people don't stick around for 21 years if the job sucks. You know what I mean? If you're not being taken care of, if they don't feel cared about.
Yep, right.
I love that you said do good deeds for free. Basically, you give without expectation, which can be difficult to do. But I believe doing good is good business. So I like that you adopt that because it's you offering up help on something that the homeowner knows that you have no benefit, like financial gain from right. those things. So I get it. So let's keep going.
Okay.
Because that's still a far ways away from 2021.
Right.
Okay. So let's keep going down that path.
Well, you know, even when we brought in investors, one of my techs said, what if they figure out your secret sauce? And I said, we don't have a secret sauce. The the key to what we do, and I tell Frank this all the time, what we do is really easy. It's just easier not to. And that's what a lot of people do. They know what to do. They know what to do every day. They just don't do it every day. You know, I always say we're a maintenance company. We just happen to do 85% replacements. And we're every month we make money. Every month we keep our guys busy. We never send a tech home 12 months out of the year. They're never sent home early. We have that work. But we started at the basis about memberships. And that was the relationships more than anything, that we wanted to get in that house, build a relationship with that customer. So if we didn't sell him anything that day or we didn't sell a system that day, they're going to call us back. We made a strong enough impression that they got involved in a membership, they're paying a monthly fee, and they're going to come back. And that's where our success really came. And we just kept on doing that over and over again. Originally, we just marketed for tune-ups, and we had a good hour and a half tune-up. And today, I see companies constantly do a 20-minute tune-up or 30-minute tune-up. But if you're going to do a tune-up, it's going to take your tech a good hour, an hour and a half to do it right.
Is it? It's because they're the reasoning or what they're using it for, the hook, to get in, right. And it's kind of a half.
Oh. Yeah, well, it's the right way to do it. If I can go ahead. But it's the right thing to do, and it's hard. And that's why people start cutting corners, and they make it less. So the customer gets less and less impressed, because if you have a guy comes in and does a bad one, then your guy or our guy comes in and does just a killer tune-up and takes everything apart and gets the customer involved and show them what they're doing. And you start coming up with recommendations. They have a tendency to listen to you more. They might not do it that day, but you get two or three times in a row the recommendations. They'll say, okay, I've heard this. Let's do this. But you've got to produce the same product every single time you're out there. And that's some of the failures I've seen is one tech could do it right 1 or 2 days and it get tired and it'll cut short and it'll do 5 or 6 tune-ups in a day. Really, the reality, you can't do more than 3 in a day to do it right. 4 at the max if you're running a really long day. But it's that consistency. And it's also talking about Jim Dodson about sales. You got to do the same sales every single call. I always like to quote Steve Smith. He's another one, been with me 20 years. He told me one time, I knew I wasn't going to sell this customer. Absolutely, there's no way this customer is going to buy. But you know what? I'm going to practice. And he sold it. And they've got to get it out of their head that don't prejudge, not on their house, not on their car, nothing. Go in and do what you know to do. Do it consistently, and you'll be an extreme success.
I love it. So don't judge a book by its cover. Frank, what were you going to say? You're going to chime in.
Look, I grew up doing this, and we would say back east, there's no way you can make money doing an hour and a half tune-up, right? Because you're trying to get through the tune-ups. So I get to Leland, and Leland says to me, like, in the first couple of weeks I'm there, he says, look, we're not a repair company. He's like, we're a maintenance company. And
we
he's
do
like, you got to see this
tune-up. Repairs.
We do, yeah, we do repairs. But these guys don't, like, go in, like, everybody has these things, like, what we're going to include in the tune-up, and not every single time a service champion's tech goes out to do a tune-up, like, they tear the system apart. I mean, they pull everything. Blower motors, I mean, to the point where Leland has them, they wax the unit, right? Because people don't know what you did. And they say, nobody's ever done anything like this. And you have to show the value because back, right, you get the swings in. Leland uses that phrase about being busy. I say we're either busy or really busy. There's no such thing as slow.
Right.
But to do that tune-up the right way when I got there was an eye-opener. Watching guys, I'm like, how do you spend an hour and a half? And Leland's like, how do you not? And it was a complete shift. You are obligated to tell the homeowner what's going on in their home. And that hour and a half tune-up, I mean, people see they see these guys outside. They're pulling stuff, cleaning it. They got the condenser pulled apart. I mean, there are 7 steps in the tune-up with, like, 6 subparts each in each step.
Right.
And Frank Spear, one of the guys in Steve Smith, like, they get irritated. They'll argue over, like, section 6, part B or C. Which one, like, when do you bring the vacuum in to show you're cleaning? I mean, but it's that detailed, but they have to see the value. And at the end of the day, I love that phrase. I said it on the first one. Leland Smith says it's easy. It's just easier not to do it. Guys get discouraged. They start to cut corners. And then they say, this system doesn't work. And we're like, well, hold on a minute. Are you doing everything? And are you engaging the customer? So I just think it was pretty unique when I came to the West Coast, especially with Leland. how different it was.
Yeah. Well, I want to chime in for just a second and how we relate there is, you know, I've been in this business now, the digital, well, for those maybe listening for the first time, I'm the CEO of a company called Rhino Strategic Solutions, which is a digital marketing company, but only for the trades since, you know, 2008. So a long time. I'm kind of in the, I mean, I'm in the same business as you guys, just in a different capacity.
Right.
But people would ask me, why would I go and do like a keynote or go do a breakout or even do this podcast and share the things that we do?
Yep.
Same reason. Because it's people will listen, they'll take notes, but then they won't actually go and do it because it's difficult or not do it consistently.
Right.
Because it's a lot of work. I mean, you guys have been able to kind of get to know us and our operation. There's a lot of people here because that's what it takes to manage this beast. But the reason I don't mind sharing is that most people just don't want to do it.
Just know, whenever we see that not happening, it's never the tech's fault. We go straight to the manager or the owner. They're not managing it every day. Every day you've got to look. I used to look constantly the time each tech spent on the call the next morning. And if somebody spent there 47 minutes, I'd go to the manager, go to the tech, and go, there's no way he did the tune-up. And we would address it. So they knew I was looking every day so they wouldn't try to shortcut it. And you can tell numbers start dropping off or they're not turning leads or they're not producing revenue. They're cutting short on the tune-up. And customers see that. And like Frank said, we're talking about waxing the unit. If we didn't get them totally involved, they walk by and they see something different. They see a nice, clean unit, and that's just a mental reminder, hey, we cleaned it up and we did it right. And it needs it. You know, Edison, all the utility companies, manufacturer companies expect that and they want that. And we do it the way that it's supposed to be done. And we just don't cut corners.
You waxed the unit?
Yeah.
For real?
I'm fascinated.
Wow.
I'm a rule follower, okay? I skipped my seasonal maintenance this year because last year I watched the technician perform it. And I looked at the pamphlet that he left me that said they were going to lubricate this and pull the, do all these things. And none of that happened. It just, right. They never went inside. And so I skipped my maintenance this year. So it's actually bad on me, right? I'm the one that will ultimately suffer from that. But I think we could probably do a full segment on the perfect tune-up.
Well, mine did, but you know who did mine?
It better have been done right. They know, they're listening.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, those guys are killer. They know.
Mine looks good.
Real quick follow-up. Everything Ringy does looks good. Real quick follow-up question on tune-ups because we could spend the whole time there. I know that's not the intent of today. Gosh, there's just so much there. When you partner with a new company and you go in and you say, hey, by the way, one of the things we're going to be doing is a 90-minute tune-up, what does the staff, how do they respond to that? What do they, and then how do you integrate that?
Well, in our case, and we're doing it now, for the last 13 years, I've never hired a competitor's tech. They have such bad habits. They don't show up. They think nothing about leaving at lunch and just not coming back, not treating customers right. And I just got fed up with it because the system's easy. Do a great tune-up, earn the respect, make recommendations, and one out of three or four would say yes. So it was such a bad people in our competitors that they didn't manage these people. So 13 years, we've trained every tech we have. We have, I was just told yesterday at Service Champions in Brea, we have 420 employees. But I used to say before all the numbers happened that we have 200 techs, and 190 we taught ourselves. So it's much higher than that now. But we have a 14-week class, and we've taught every single tech in Brea how to do the tune-up, and they don't know any different. And the key thing is that's what they know. So we teach them how to do that. We teach them how to turn leads. We teach them how to park your truck, you know, put a booty on, but don't put the second booty on until the customer opens the door because they'll think you just have gray shoes on. So you got to build that value. Then what to say, how to walk to the thermostat. Don't touch the thermostat. Have the customer turn it on. Have them tell you what's going on before you even get involved in it. And all those things we teach are just really basic stuff, easy stuff to do, but you got to do it each time. And that's a big, big difference of what I've seen other companies do who don't teach that, or they all go out and try to recruit all your competitors. And we get recruited all the time because everybody knows, at least in Orange County, we train. And and our worst guy would be their best guy.
Got it. So are you bringing in, excuse me, are you bringing in people who have zero skill set and you're training from scratch?
For 13 years, I think we've hired one or two sales guys, and every tech is none. In fact, before COVID, Frank and I were the last ones to interview. 15-minute interview, they'd have the three of them, and Frank and I would walk in, And in 5 minutes, I would know if we're going to hire the guy. Did he smile? Did he have eye contact? Was he pleasant? Was he laughing? Would my wife buy from him, or would my daughter be afraid of him? And if he's got that personality, we can teach the technical. You just can't teach the personality. And we do classes, used to do 20, now we're up to 40 or so every 14 weeks. And, first week, I learned this from Dave Geiger, all role play. And we'll lose one or two because they don't like the role play. Second week, I want them in an attic. I want them to know how hot an attic is. That you're in an attic.
Week two?
Yeah.
get them out.
Yeah.
And you lose one or two. So now you got a core. They understand it's going to be hot. But these guys really, truly come out after a 14-week class, making 80 to 100,000 the first year, and beyond that. And it's just a great job for these guys or girls that want to come in and learn a trade and really not have to go to school for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that's something we've been trying super hard, using our own influence to really exploit how great of an opportunity it really is. Once you can get past this stupid stigma of it's not a great, whatever. I'm so sick of hearing it.
Yeah, but blue collar.
Yeah, so we've been trying to push that and use whatever influence we have, too. It's good to hear that because, we have, I had people reaching out to me who are new in college that listen to the podcast, which is pretty cool, and saying, well, how can I get connected with these guys who has their own trade schools? Because what they like is that they can go to a single organization, get trained, and they're really just training for their position, but they're getting paid to train.
Right.
And then they know what their career path looks like.
Yeah.
Which is important too. So it's a 14 week school, right?
That's 14 week. We pay them 14 weeks. They're in and out of the truck with ride alongs. Their last week or so, they're actually in the truck by themselves. And if they're not performing, we bring them back in. We keep on working with them. Once we know that they're performing at the right level, then we'll pass them off to a service manager.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game. So when you guys, I'm sorry, I'm going to jump all over the place for just a second.
Sure.
So when you guys have a partnership, you bring in maybe like a Ringy or Jeff or like whomever it is, Luke.
Sure.
But do you have to start to make them service? How does that integration work?
It's a really good question. Back to Paul's question to us about one, we're investing in just really great businesses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Travis, his team, Garrett, the GM there at ProSkill. I mean, those guys, they get it. They're aggressive. They're polished. They want to be better every day. We don't come in and say like, here's the manual and here's the truck at service. Like, they have a lot of great processes. What we want to say is, hey, why don't you take a look at what we do? And then somewhere, and most of them during due diligence, Leland and I are spending time saying, hey, how do you do this or how do you do that? We don't come in. We don't want to unload a group of things to do. They're already a great business. We just think we can tweak some things. We don't take the existing staff and say, you must now do a 90-minute tune-up. We'll say, hey, here's the benefit to doing that. And then slowly over time, what we find is they're already intrigued, meaning the management staff. And Leland says this, and I don't want to take his time from talking about it, but when the leadership believes it, then and they buy in, then the rest of the team will. Because those businesses we invest in have great leadership. I mean, they really do.
Yep.
Lou at Hobaika. I mean, these guys just in this market. So what they love is this 14-week class if they aren't already doing it. Look, next year we're going to train 1,000 trainees. Like, that's what's in the budget for 2020. 1,000.
That's incredible, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be three regional training centers, Northern California, Southern California, and Brea. We're looking at real estate right now here in your right in your backyard because we need 30, 40,000 square feet to train, you know, 80 to 100 guys every quarter in each one of these. And it's the recipe he used 13 years ago. That's not to say we don't have great people in the businesses right now. It's just saying, hey, a lot of those guys will say, hey, if I do that, I can impact my outcome and my income. And so they start to get open to it. So we do not have this philosophy like, here's a truckload of stuff, start doing it. We want to slowly, look, again, invested in great businesses, keep doing what you're doing, see if we can help. And I think that's, you know, that's what we want to do with it. And
the good thing is, we have them fly down if they want. If, you know, it's hard to believe if you've got techs for 10 years making 80 grand, and I'm telling you our new guys are making 100. It's hard to believe. So we fly down. We'll pay to fly them down, ride with the guy for a day, and see what he does. Same with the salespeople or any position. We really encourage them to come down and see it happen without Frank or I there, just by yourself, ask questions, talk to anybody you want, but learn what we're trying to do. Then we go back. And I think this is the key to our success, is it's a team effort. We never come into ProSkill or Hobaika or any of the companies that we deal with and say, this is what you have to do. We walk in and say, what do you think about this? This is something that we've done. This is how it's worked. This is how it's worked over here up in Northern California or different places. How do you think we can make it work for you? Because you got, like Frank said, you got to get the owners, you got to get the managers, and get that buy-in, then they'll buy it, they'll sell it down. But can't just go into the tech and try to sell it up.
Yep. So I know quite a few of your guys' partners, obviously, from being in the industry a long time too. And so I understand like the characteristics of those right. people. Mm-hmm. I think that I asked that question on purpose just to kind of, you know, any myth that might be out there, what it looks like. And that is, it's more of an excitement of, okay, what else can I learn? And I think even when you and I were talking, Frank, about, because we've talked about Travis, is they even had some things on the, I think, what, the plumbing side that maybe you were able to pick up. Yeah, so, but it's all like this big family of, man, what are we learning? What can we take from this? You said it right in the beginning, Leland, on you're always trying to constantly learn.
Right.
And you can pick up things from people and implement it into the overall family. Yep. That makes you all better. We're
putting our GMs on calls 2 days a week with our four regional directors. We want them to feel like they're part of a team.
Yeah.
Like, we want them to feel like, and Leland has been very clear with this, if somebody has a better idea, that means, to your point, even Service Champions doesn't have all the answers. I talked about this when we first got on. Leland Smith and Dave Geiger are ridiculously successful because they never thought their business was doing as well as it should be doing, and they listened and went in and said, as opposed to so many owners that say, like, I got it all figured out. That specifically those two guys don't say their business is running top dead center. They say, man, we have $8 and $10 million months just in Brea. And Leland's like, why wasn't it 12? You know, like, we didn't, yeah. You know, and Gary Reed is longtime GM there, but I, you know, it's that camaraderie with them on a call. It's a 30 minute call. How you doing? Are you ahead, behind? What can we help you with?
Yeah.
And those people start to talk. We want them part of a team. We want them to feel they're competitive, but we cheer for people who do well, and we're going to support the people that are off the pace, and what can we help with? Can we get someone there to help you? Can we look at what your offerings are? They're great businesses. We just want to make them – we think we can help make them even better. That's what is really – it's really cool to watch it. And now these GMs all kind of talk amongst themselves. Hey,
that's cool.
I want to start my underground. I need to teach guys to do, you know, run the cable and start to clear drain so I can do it. You know, More Home Services, great example. Right. Didn't do plumbing. Got a plumbing manager, and this guy is fantastic. Went from doing, you know, they're doing $50,000 a month. They're doing $250,000, you know, within, you know, 6-7 months of this guy getting on. But talent, personalities, camaraderie, that's what we're about. And I think you're bringing up a really good point. People that are out there that think, Leland hears this, we hear it 100% of the time. well, I don't know what happens if I end up, you know, quote unquote, selling my business. And we're like, it's a great question. Leland's first thing is, better know who you're partnering with.
Yep.
And, right. you know, the top people in the industry, certainly we feel like we're at the top of that scale, but yep. we're very complimentary of those people also doing what they're doing in our, you know, Dave Geiger, Ken Haynes, Ken Goodrich. I mean, those are top tier, know how to operate businesses, long time experience in the business. They're just good people. And find out what works for you, but we don't want to come in and tear apart. We saw that 22 years ago with some other people doing it. Leland and I laugh about it all the time. I mean, that was a bad model. That was a, I'm that aware. Was a bad model.
Yeah, I'm aware.
It's a different, yeah. it's a different model, you know, smarter.
Well, what I love is that what you guys are talking about is you're almost hitting a couple different things that I think are extremely important on why somebody would even want to be a part of the Service Champions family. That's why I'm going to reference this, is that one, you pay exceptionally well. Right. That's one piece of it. And so, yes, that might be what's important to most, but it not, might not be what's important to all.
Right.
Also, how you make someone feel being cared about absolutely matters. And you can't fake it.
Right.
I think you got to make sure you genuinely care. There's just no way that, that you two can do that at scale to everybody. So you have to have good leadership in place. But right. there are ways you can relay that message. But so I think that the fact that you pay extremely well is very a key ingredient to the what your guys' big picture is, success, because you got to have bodies.
Right.
How you treat them is great. But what I also love is that, and you talked about this a little bit at Rhino X, Leland, was the some of the eight, I think it's the eight promises that Service Champions has. But so it's not just we pay you well, we take good care of you, but we also, client fulfillment is your job.
Right.
And so what, can you talk a little bit about what those eight promises are? That, because if I'm an employee, that makes me feel good that I'm doing good business.
You know, there's a lot of, what we call them, the peace of mind guarantees. And some of them are basic. Some we came up years ago, like better than you found it. If we leave your house the least bit dirty, we always guarantee we're going to leave it better than you found it. If not, we're going to clean your whole house. But probably the one thing that sets us apart, that people say at times they do this, but they don't, is we have a happy money promise. Basically, it says, if you're not happy, we cannot make you happy, you don't have to pay. We'll tear out a system. We'll give them the repair for free. We'll do whatever it takes to make them happy. We're not going to leave a house unless the customer's happy.
No matter what?
No matter what. Wow. And we empower from the tech, the new tech down and up. If you're at a home and a customer's unhappy, don't ever leave. Do whatever you think you need to do, but treat them like family. Make any decision in that situation. If that customer's upset, what would you want your mother treated like, or your brother, your sister, or your grandfather? Make that decision. I don't care how wrong it is, we'll support it. If it's a bad decision, we'll help you make a better decision next time, but don't leave. If you got to feel like you got to give it away free because you made a mistake or they misunderstood something, just make them happy and then always try to wow them, to give them a little bit more than what it is, because we want them to come back. So we empower that to our call center agents. If they're on the phone, a customer's upset, I don't want them to hang up until that customer is happy and wowed, because if it gets to me, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So if they've got the power to do it at any level below me, why not do it? So those are the key things. You know, we've got different warranties, but I think that's the one that stands out the most, that we try to push the most, that if you're not happy, you're not going to pay.
You would think that no employee would want that to roll up to Leland Smith.
No. Well, let me just tell you, you're right. They don't.
I would imagine.
Because
they exercise their right to.
I can do drywall.
Yeah. So what I always tell them, I said, if they get to me, it's probably going to be for free, and I'm walking down the hall looking for Frank or somebody. Who in the hell didn't do this before? Why did it get to me? Because everybody's empowered to do what I just did. Sure. So it should never have to ever get up to me.
I think. Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
I was going to say the biggest coaching I actually have to give. I shouldn't say coaching for the new partners, but even, you know, our regional directors came from some, I've known these guys for a long time, but we're not in the business of, like, it's not debate with the customer. Doesn't mean we shouldn't have a dialogue with them, but if they're upset, it's pretty clear cut. What makes them happy? It's really not that difficult. Customers believe today they're calling up and they think we're going to fight. somebody wants.
People do. That's what they expect.
That's what they expect. Yeah, I mean, that's what the industry, has established. The bar is so low on customer service in most industries, not just ours. You could step over the damn thing without even noticing it's there. That's how low the bar is.
I agree.
And so, again, all the great companies seem to be doing the same thing. But let's not get on a phone and debate with somebody. Why are they unhappy? There is something else, by the way, might be going on in their life, and you don't know what that is. You might be the recipient of something else. Try to figure it out. Leland's specific background is, or what he tells everybody, and you talked about this just a couple minutes ago, it starts with him, and then it has to trickle down through the entire organization. When you tell people, just make the customer happy, that doesn't mean we just want to give away hundreds of thousands of dollars. What it means is that customer is so important to us. Quite frankly, our employees are so important to us. We have an obligation to take care of them. And it's really very simple. I tell the story. When the first time I was there for like a month, I walk into Leland's office and I had to go visit a job with one of our salespeople. Nothing that the salesperson, in my opinion, did wrong, but clearly there was a issue, you know, that they had in their opinion. And it was like a $10,000 refund. Now, we don't do many of those, but I happen to go out and like, oh, sure, the first one I'm on. Walked into Leland's office. I'm like, he goes, how'd it go? I said, hey, I got to give $10,000 back. Like, no missing a beat, no anything. He's like, what could we have done differently? Not how'd you give away $10,000? You've been here a month. It was, what do you think we could have done differently to avoid that? And that's the philosophy you have to put across to the, you know, 1,400 employees in the business today, and they have to have that. It's ultra, ultra important.
So now, you're not saying, though, to and I very much respect that. We do similar stuff here too, but our job is to make sure that we don't just concede. You still have to educate to make sure you're making the right decisions.
I would say, I mean, Leland does it the best. If you heard him on the phone with a customer, I mean, it's a very simple conversation. How can we make you happy?
I mean, it's the key thing is simple. I've never had a customer call and complain that didn't have a reason. I've never had them call and complain to me that we missed it 3 or 4 times. We could have made them happy. And customers don't call just to complain. Something's going on, and that's my biggest thing is to get people to realize, fix the problem. The problem's a manager, a tech, or somebody that dropped the ball. Fix that so it doesn't happen again. And those are the things that I think we really succeed at is stopping the problems. Not worried about taking care of the customer, giving money back. We do whatever we got to do. Just that it doesn't happen again.
So do you empower everybody to accountability is big here, right? So is to make it okay for them to fail and admit it. I did mess this thing up. And so that way they don't think like, man, I don't want to say anything because then I feel like I'm going to be reprimanded for those things. So do you also put that out there to where somebody knows that if I do mess up, it's just better for me just to say, yeah, I did mess this thing up. So trying to cover it up.
I'd much rather hear that than try to cover it up.
Same. Because
if you acknowledge a problem, you can fix it.
Faster.
You hide the problem, it's still there, and you're going to still do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The freedom to make mistakes.
Yes, right. Sir. Paul, okay, man, I'm railroading
not
this
too
buddy.
Many of them. A few.
Not too many of them,
you only
right?
You only get so many.
Yeah, you can't do the same mistake over and over again.
How many strikes? Chris. How many strikes do you get?
No, I don't keep track.
Exactly. All right. I'd like to, if I may, attempt a transition to talk more about growth and strategy, but I want to acknowledge something that's a quick takeaway early in this conversation. Chris, I feel like we've invited like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in, and we're asking them about like, tell us everything about the dynasty. How'd you create this? And they're like, well, we did the right things every day. We blocked really well. We tackled really well. We tied our shoes really well. But the takeaway here is that everybody listening to this right now, like everything that will put you, not everything, but many of the things that can put you in a position to run a dynasty like this are within your control today at one employee, at two employees, at three employees and 300. But anyways, I'll back up a moment. I do want to talk about kind of, you know, service champions, you know, 2000 era, you're growing the business again. At what point did you decide to, one, scale into other markets, and two, become what you are now, which is, I want to say, one of the largest, if not the largest brand in the country. Is that right?
We're probably one of the top 2 or 3. I know we're the most profitable of the top ones. But ask me this next year, and I'll say, yes, we are number one.
Okay, I'm doing it. Rhino X, I'm asking.
All right.
In front of your peers.
That was a powerful, subtle moment there.
Well, no, it's true. So what was your first question?
when did you decide to take a business that you figured out and you were growing and doing well? When did you decide to scale into other markets and to become the big brand you are today?
Well, first of all, I've always thought we're never not going to grow. And that's what Frank was saying. When we hit a $5 million month, I said, why didn't we do six? Mm-hmm. I think we did $8 million last month or this month, and I'm saying, why didn't we do 10? But in a sarcastic, joking way, but, you know, we're very good, but we're always better. We always can do better. There's always things. So we're always growing. And I think in January of 19, a private equity group approached us and offered us a price that I thought I'd get in 2 or 3 years. And I agreed. And at one of the points, this group looked at me and said, how do you do this? We've seen hundreds of financials. I've never seen a financial this strong. We were $45 million at 22% profit, and they hadn't seen it. And so
22 points?
That's easy.
Everybody listening right now was like, easy.
It is easy. Uncle Joe told me early on, he said, if they're not complaining about the price, charge more. So, but, you know, I'll go back and tell you, March of 1992, CSG Group, Jim Abrams and John Young, they taught me what we're doing today. Do a great tune-up, turn a lead, be the higher provider of the market, higher price in the market, but provide that level of service to your customer. So long story short, the private equity came in, and we had a goal of $260 million at a $40 million EBITDA. And we're going to do it in 3 to 5 years. 18 months, we hit 280 at 80 million, 60 million, 60 million, 60 million EBITDA in 18 months. And we knocked it out of the park. And then they brought in our current group, Odyssey. And it was pretty exciting. And they want us to double or triple. And we're at double rate into this year.
So they basically said, okay, we get it.
Yeah.
Let's keep going.
So, but yeah, to get into it, it was... You know, there's companies we say no to and that we look at and we just know it's not a fit.
Sure.
And, you know, I always, when I talk to an owner, I'll tell them, the money's important, but what's most important is two other things. What's your life going to be like after? Who are you going to work with? Can you get along with them? Do you share the same philosophy? So we really share our philosophy about paying the most, hold people accountable, structure, customers have to be taken care of, and the company's always there. And the second one is about the employees. Everybody loves their employees, and we're not in there, and they don't get it, but we're not coming in to fire everybody and just disrupt everything. We're going to come in and let this business sit for at least 90 days just to observe. And there hasn't been a single company yet that I've not walked in, small or large, that I've learned something. And we pick up that. We study the company first. We study what they're doing good. We ask them, what do you think you guys do really good? What do you think you need some help on? Then we work as a team. I've got a title of CEO, which I hate because it means nothing. I've got one vote. We've got an executive team of four people, and I'm one vote. I'll give you an example of a company we looked at, and I said, no, I don't want this company. The other three said yes. So we moved forward on it, and I didn't have the dictator. I didn't have the veto vote. But, again, it's working as a team, I think, more than anything, that they see that we're there to help them, and we're not there to hurt the employees. We're gonna when I come in and talk to the guys in the field, I tell them, you'll never make a dime less, but I guarantee you'll make more money you've ever made in your life. Give us a couple months to get to that, and we will work that up. So I think that's a lot of our success, is that we just want to come in and make it better, and people fear that, and we try to overcome that as much as we can. But I'll give you an example. When we went from the $45 million to $280 million, we didn't add a body. We didn't have any district. It was Frank and I and Katie and Daniel. We were still running Brea, and we ran another $240 million companies at the same time. So we were working pretty hard. So once we
got the second. I like that you said from 45 to
yeah.
Monster Jet.
So when we did that, we just worked hard, but now we got the district managers because it's too much for Frank. And
sure.
So hope that answered your question.
Yeah, that was actually a great response.
Yeah.
Paul, did you have anything you want to piggyback on that?
So 2019 is when really that process started.
Yes, sir.
What do you miss from the days when it was just the Leland Smith Show, when you answered to yourself?
I don't think I ever answered to myself. I've always said this. When I got to 20 million, I've never ran a $20 million company. I never ran a 40 million. I've never ran a 300 some million dollar company. But you surround yourself with people that are as good as you are, if not better. So when Frank and I partner up, I hired Frank. He's just as good as I am, but he's better. And I've got people who have been with me long term. Katie, our CMO, has been with me 16 years. Gary, our GM, 16 years. I got Barbara, our main dispatcher, 30 years she's been with
me. Wow.
I mean, just different people that have been there. And I think the key thing, if people don't do this, if you want to take one thing away, I think it was my key to success. I've always surrounded myself with people that were bigger than I was. And always the peer groups or whatever you want to call it. Kevin Comerford and I started this, and I did it before with his father. We'd get groups together, so the last 15 years, Kevin and I have had a group of maybe 6 or 7 companies, and we would meet sometimes 3 months, every 6 months, but every month we would share financials, and we would talk every week, and any problem that I would have, I could share, and I'd get 6 different answers back. Might be 6 different ones, too, so you pick which one's the best for you. But when you share in financials and you can go down and see exactly where you're broken and go in and fix it, that you can know you can improve, that was the gift that was given to me to have friends like that. And Morris Jenkins was part of it. Dewey was there early on. Milestone, Kevin, and just different people that were really good. And Horizon, Dave and Mark were part of it until they went up and sold. And you can't learn. You always got to find somebody better than you. And if you're a $10 million company, go find some 20 and 30s, but make sure, get them to share the financials. It cuts out the BS. There's a lot of guys out there love to brag about all kinds of money they're making, and they're not making it.
Yeah.
They're talkers. But if you're willing to share a financial, you can really get into it, and everything's kind of opened up. And I think that's one of the keys to my success is that I had people. But when you get to the top of the group, if you're the 40 million and everybody else is 20, go find your 60 and 80. And that's where I came in Horizon. They were 80 and 100. And here I was just a little tiny 40 million and learning from Dave and Mark. So I think that's what you have to do is get outside of – I don't know any of our competitors. I just never really thought about them. It's just outside the market. What's out across the country?
Losers. Focus on winners.
Yeah.
Winners focus on winning.
Well, you're the loser at the bottom, but you got to find some winners.
Yeah. I think what I heard out of that, too, is there's a vulnerability in sharing your financials, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, then the veil is up.
Get
right?
under the hood.
You can see it all.
It's hard to BS doing.
And so, but the big win from that is if you're vulnerable enough to share those financials and know, like, you got room to grow. The big upside is you now let somebody in who's done it, who can help, and you're not talking about fake numbers. We're talking about real things, but can actually find the issues and or at least pinpoint where some of the issues are and fix them, whether it be sales or ops or whatever it is. But that's what I hear is like, you got to be vulnerable to do it. That's one hell of a peer group, by the way, that you yeah. you're a part of.
But you got to think, just a shocker for me was I learned from a peer group, one of our groups, I won't say which one just yet, but they asked for like $2 million from a vendor to sign a 3 or 4 year contract. And I thought, nobody in their right mind would do it. So when Kevin and I did a contract, we asked for $1 million. And they said yes. They gave us $1 million day one up front for a 3 year contract.
Wow.
And you think, I'm probably going to piss off some vendors now. But, you know, if you don't ask for it, you don't get it. But you got to know that vendor group or the peer group, if you're associate people larger, you know what to ask for. But if you're just hanging out with guys your size, you don't know what to ask for. You don't know what pricing or benefits or what's out there that you can get that's out there unless you do that and you keep on looking up higher and higher.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in already envisioning. You might think I'm crazy for saying this. I've always kind of envisioned this business at a certain level. I mean, we're a successful company, but I've always envisioned it as I'm never quite where I want to be yet with the offerings I want and the locations that I want. But I've always kind of thought, this is what it's going to feel like when I'm there. This is what it's going to feel like when I'm there. And I've hit I've hit different levels, so I'm not saying that. But I realized that once I got there, I was like, well, if I also offered this and was in now Canada, or if I was also in Australia, but I was starting to like envision those things and feel those things. And then I just started asking a bunch of questions.
Right.
And so I've said this even when we were talking, when you guys were out here at the end of, or beginning of the year, everybody's willing to help right now. Like everybody's willing to help somebody, whether there's something to be from it, if something comes from it or not. We had a customer of ours, a guy that was here for Rhino X, small guy, who was right around 2 million when he was here. He implemented some of the things he had learned from Rhino X,
right.
And he's pacing to 4 million. And he's got a healthy bottom line, whatever that means. Got a healthy bottom line, certainly didn't share it with me. Healthy for him. However, he called me yesterday sent me a text message yesterday and just said, hey, I have a healthy bottom line right now. I know I'm going to lose it in fall and winter. That's what he said to me. Oh. So I said, have you met with anybody? I said, I connected him with Chad Peterman, you know, because Chad is, I think, exceptional with financials. And I know Chad is a good friend of mine. And so Chad, being the good guy that he is, said, yeah, man, let me connect with you. Are you willing to share your financials? I told him, you better be willing to share all your financials. He's like, yeah, man, I'm an open book. That kind of vulnerability is going to help him so much going into this year. And he was self-aware, like, hey, yeah, I'm doing good now, but I know what's coming. So he's obviously recognizing some sort of patterns.
Yeah.
But what's cool about a guy like that, even though he's that small, is you can see he came to the event. He was super quiet. Yep. And he just was soaking things in, went back, actually did things. And now he's saying, it's good right now, but I know I'm about to have trouble. I need help.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it's important, you know, for those guys, you know, Leland will say this, you got to take – just a couple of things and see what works. I mean, look, I had the luxury of talking to Chad. He's got just a beast of a business there in Indianapolis. I talk to him, you know, once in a while, and it's like he doubles every month. But he you know, they're very into what's going on in the financial, and I think that was a big thing with certainly with all the great operators and owners. But you got to get in the weeds. And I said that earlier. It's, you used the better term than I did. I don't think I used the term. It's that vulnerability where, again, Leland – specifically, Dave, you know, they're like, I mean, Leland thinks a 22% business in and out is broken, like all the time. It's always broken. Yep. He's like, this thing's broken. I'm like, I'm not sure it's broken. I think we could be better. But, you know, he does laugh. But, I mean, there's always improvement. And if you, you know, you can have that thought about your business, hey, how can I constantly be better versus, hey, what's just good enough?
Yeah.
That's just not in any of our partnerships. I would say all of our partners are like, all go, no quit. How do we get better? Have fun doing what we're doing. And that's kind of the joke I text out to the regional directors. It's like, you know, we're talking on the phones early. Is there this? I'm like, end of my texts are always like, all go, no quit. But we're having fun.
Nice.
But I think back to those financials are like, challenge yourself all the time to be better.
Yeah.
The guy sitting across from me didn't get to where he was getting because – he thought he was just okay at 22, he wants to be 25. At 25, he wants to figure out how to be 30%. There's a way to do it, or you can just say, hey, that's a pretty good number. And I think that's the challenge for all the businesses out there.
And people aren't just getting lucky. I'm a big believer in, like, you know, luck is when preparation meets opportunity, you know?
I'd say the harder you work, the luckier you get. That's my opinion. I mean,
makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Preparation meets opportunity.
That's it.
Sometimes you got to create your own opportunity, but you are responsible for your own preparation. Yep. Paul, you have anything you want to add to that, man? Or Leland, you have anything?
Yeah, you know, I want to ask two questions, but one at a time. So two in a row. Leland, you mentioned vendors a couple of times. What role did vendors play throughout your journey and really into your plans for the future at Service Champions?
The journey, not really, because I never knew that you could negotiate. Ask for things that you never even dreamed of. So going forward, I think creating relationships with vendors are good for the company, good for the investors and the bottom line. So I spend a lot of times talking to different vendors as we grow. What you negotiate at 100 million is a little bit different when you're at 400 million. And so, but it's got to be a win-win for both of them, though. They've got to be able to win. You can't take all their money, but you can take as much as you think you can get.
Respectfully.
The key thing is you've got to ask. And if they say no, it's okay. Then you might have hit a limit.
Right.
How are you going to hit it if you don't ask?
Yeah.
You got to find it.
I've always heard so many good things about you. Now I'm attributing it to you weren't negotiating for the first part of the 2000s. So everybody loved it.
Yeah.
So follow-up question. When you sit down with a potential partner, a new company that you're going to acquire or partner with, what does the deal structure look like? Does it vary by different owners or different markets, or do you have kind of a playbook that, hey, this is what it looks like to partner with us?
Yeah, the playbook, and Frank can help me with this too, but it's pretty much the same. You know, like I said before, we don't try to lowball people. We pay pretty much the top end money. We know what's out there, and there's brokers out there that know what people are paying, so we're not shy of paying the right price. We look for the company and see if it's going to be a fit for us. And we're not stuck on the owner staying. If the owner stays, that's great. If the owner doesn't want to stay and he's got a good staff, that's great. We're about ready to close here in a week or so of a company that the owner wants to go, and he's telling us they need a GM there. So Frank is really good. We've got one or two set up waiting in the wings to go in, so we'll send somebody in. So each situation is different, but as I tell them, when we're done, we have to be happy. It cannot be, I won, you lost. They have to feel that they won. Right. We have to feel like we won. Their employees and managers all have to feel like they won. And I encourage them to do what I did. When I closed, I gave bonuses to my key people, and I'm very happy to say that literally I have probably six multi-millionaires working for me every day in the office that weren't that 3 years ago. But you know,
that's pretty cool.
I shared part of what I got because I didn't do it by myself.
Right.
And Frank and the other people, a part of our team, I bonused them. They reinvested in the company, and then it paid out, and they reinvested it again. And everybody's got to win. So if you ever create an environment that there's a loser, it's going to be a bad deal. Everybody's got to win.
I'd say, Paul, you know, one other thing, you know, our partner, Odyssey Investment Partners out of New York, we couldn't have a better partner. They literally, I mean, they are very transparent, and they will look to Leland, myself, Daniel, and Katie and say, here's what we think, but at the end of the day, you're running the business. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we were very lucky to run into a partner like that. I mean, we got to sort through some, but talking to these guys, they let us run the business. They have 30 years, you know, in M&A. They're managing nearly $7 billion in assets. So they have a little bit of background. But when it comes to, you know, finding the business, Leland just hit it. For us, deal structure is actually the easy part. You know, an owner's going to get a big chunk of money up front, depending on, you know, I mean, big either way.
Sure.
And then they're going to probably reinvest. We like that.
Yeah.
We encourage that. We believe we've already done it once. Technically, for Leland, he's done it twice, and we're going, you know, everybody wants to do it again. All the great, these great platforms are going to do it again. It'll be interesting to see who they partner with and how they get there. But we want them to help steward the business off and make it a good handoff. I mean, that's our big thing. But we have probably vetted that through the, to Leland's point, like, we want a happy transition. We don't want people upset. We want them happy. And deal structure is varied. Leland's, I think, hit the nail on the head further with, look, we're not in there to lowball somebody. Like, we are going to invest in premium businesses. We're probably going to pay a premium. We know what it is. Everybody knows who's playing in what market. We know probably who we're up against, and they probably know they're up against us, and where we're at in the country. And but we want the right, it's just like our teams, it's just like the people on our teams, we got to have the right personalities. If it's a wrong setup, we will say no. We will leave that meeting and say, either great business, just don't see that working for us. Right. We are just not going to partner, because the long-term success is the people. It just is. And Odyssey knows that. They're just like, Frank, Leland, Daniel, Katie, what's the, like, where's the trap door in this one? And it's usually a personnel issue. But Odyssey, I just want to make sure I talk about them because Leland says, who you're partnering with? Yeah, you're partnering with Service Champions and Leland and Frank and Katie and Daniel, and, but you're partnering with a Odyssey is incredibly supportive of these deals and says, what do you see? Tell us what your expertise is with, you know, all these years you guys have in the industry. Most of the people know Leland somewhere, you know, in, you know, or ran across them. It's amazing how many, but you got to have a great partner. And there's a lot of great partners out there. We talk to, you know, our peers who have great partners, but for us, Odyssey's like ideal. They're, we have the money, write good deals. Let's grow the business, add good partnerships. Let's put a, you know, put a flag in the ground where we think we can build off of it. So I just like to talk about that because it's people also back to your original question. Like they don't know what that means. Like, how does this work?
Yep.
So
still a misconception. Still, oh, like, totally. Even though we've talked about it, like, so many times on.
Yeah. They don't understand it. And it's a behind the scenes transaction for us. At the end of the day, we have to run the business, but we lean on them for resources to say like, hey, what do you think? Or look, we took 200, we took 45 and made it, you know, 280. We're going to be at 400 here in about 12 days, you know, and we're trying to get to 500.
With 40 points on the
bottom. Yeah, we're trying to get to 500. You know, Dennis Moore, who's he's a managing partner, he said, hey, what Leland presses every single time, like, what's the goal? We are goal-oriented. I think it's every call. He's like, so what's the goal? Like, where do we have to get to? Like, what do we want to do here? And they said, can you double the business in 36 months? We're trying to do it in 12. But we're trying to do it with the right partners, right people.
You know what's interesting that's parlayed into, like, all of the successes, if you think kind of back down to you talking about just paying the technicians exceptionally well.
Right.
Is you're also taking care of your leadership team and you know, treating them exceptionally well. There's like this cadence that I'm seeing here that happens to work. I think this is an exceptional story. Obviously, as you guys know from different conversations, I mean, I've been in the M&A market has been absolutely insane the past, let's just say, year and a half. For me, I've been involved. One of the biggest takeaways I've had from, well, I would say the biggest takeaway I've had from us now having this podcast a year and a half and its success has come from the guests and what I've learned. I have so many notes and things, and I keep everybody's sheet from every episode we've ever done. And so I've got reference things to go back and reference when something comes up, because there's probably not a topic I haven't hit. It just so happens that the mergers and acquisition space has become really, and people still aren't getting it. That being said, I do believe this is helping people get it, and they're reaching out more. You guys know we've made connections and things like that as well. So I'm proud of those things. I'm not exempt from that.
Right.
You know, I get it. I understand, like, hey, my business is super successful. We have all these amazing things going on. Yes, there's a lot of private equity that reaches out. There's private capital reaches out. There's all these different variations of things. And for me, it's what I've learned from my buddies who have also, been in partnerships is the money will be there. You have to know what you want to do. Do you want to move on? Do you want to grow this thing? Because the way I was looking at it was all wrong. I don't want to sell my business. You don't have to. I like using the word partner because that's essentially what it is. If you have a growth plan in place, and you better have a growth plan in place, and you can find a good partner to help you execute that growth plan, but kind of keep your values in place and your leadership in place, and you want to do business with them.
Yeah.
Why not?
Right.
You know, why not? And that's to me is, I didn't understand. If you asked me 2 years ago, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I understand it very much so today.
That partnership piece is
the, huge.
That's the term we use.
It's huge.
We are all investors. Period. Like, we're all investors. Everybody knows the game. How do we find the right partners? And quite honestly, whether that be vendors or businesses we invest in, how do we find the right partners?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's...
I like to say one thing that people are concerned about what it would be like or if they're ready to do it now or maybe they should wait a year or two. I tell them constantly, it doesn't cost you anything to get a price. Now, you might share some financials, doesn't cost you anything, then all of a sudden you're talk to somebody and you'll see a price that you might like, you say no. Or if you like it, you say yes, then you move on. But to get to that point of finding out what your business is worth, any of us, we spend the time with you, talk to you about it, share with you, then you make that decision, like you said. Would I be happy with this group? Would I be happier staying and not selling? Do I have a chance that I could do this without you guys? So it's just an interesting thing to always, if you're interested or even close to it, get a price. Yeah. People will give you a price.
I would say, I don't know if we didn't really ask to do this, Chris, so I'll get in trouble after.
Approved.
You know, I mean, approved. Really, you know, I'd love to put, you know, Leland, you know, I know, look, I get to go to work with one of the greatest guys in the industry every day, right? And I had another one I got to spend, you know, a lot of years with.
Yep.
Like, can we give his, you know, I say this, Leland's a big, you know, he's this huge proponent of coming and visit our business. And look, honestly, I can say this, and he's sitting here, and he has the right to correct me because I still say he's a CEO and he founded the business. You want to come in and visit, whether it's you want a partner or you just want to learn about the business, you okay if I give your email out or something? Sure. I mean, people, just ask us a question. Even if it's not, like, you may ask us about another partnership you want to make. We aren't there to say, do this or do that. We can answer questions. We're glad to do those things. If people have questions, reach out to us. Come visit, see what we're about. But even if it's not an M&A piece or you just want to know or you're unsure, Leland's always invited businesses in to do that. And I think it's the same thing with communication. You have a question, email the guy, email me. Well, it's not about, hey, let's, oh, great, we can get our claws in you and see if you'll do something. Maybe it's just, I'm unsure. Or can you tell us about it? Or, hey, I'm taking all these calls, all these owners. You talked about M&A, like being like on fire. I mean, we've heard of names. We've never, Ken Haynes said it in the meeting. He's like, our count was 23. I think it was 23 more came in last week. You know, doing this stuff in our industry. But yeah. I mean that sincerely. I get to work, you know, every day with Leland. But I think, you know, email Leland L. Smith at servicechampions.com and F. DeMarco at servicechampions. We'll answer whatever question we have. They always run through you if they're your customer. People, I've had more people from this podcast say, I heard you, and we visited companies. You know, it's not about plugging this place, but we want to help. We want to help better an industry we've spent our entire lives in. If it's advice to somebody else, I mean, I get to tell a story, but Leland's given advice to people we've ended up partnering with, and it cost us more money. But he was so sincere about helping because
I learned early on with a guy named Ron McKing back in CSG days, don't always be a taker. At that time, I was a taker. I was learning and learning. So I've always let anybody who's asked, you want to come in the building, come in, walk around. You don't have to talk to me. Talk to anybody you want. And we have people constantly coming in, seeing what we do. I'll try to help them. There's a company that we actually originally turned down a year or so ago. They came in for an entire day, and we let them go through the whole place the entire day. A year later, they come back up, much more profitable, and we're in the midst of trying to acquire them, invest with them now.
You said a year and a half?
Yeah, a year and a half later, and trying to invest with them. And they're a good company. They turn things around because of the visit. And we're very open to let people come in. I have for 15, 20 years. If you want to come in, come in.
So
that gets back to sharing the financials. You share ideals. You just share. Because there's really no secrets to this. I mean, air conditioning, it is. The secret is do it every day. Do it consistently. Deliver the same product to the customer consistently, and they see it.
So people that are listening right now, I 100% know that this happens, is they're too intimidated to reach out.
I'm just an innocent old country boy from Kentucky, man.
You said you just went to UK. By the way, Devin Booker went to UK.
Oh, there you go. So.
UK? Devin Booker. So you, if you're listening, don't be, you know, reach out.
Yeah.
Like they're telling you. Reach out. Frank just gave out both of their emails. And again, like obviously you can always, if you'd rather us connect, you are happy to do it. But don't be a wimp. Reach out
yourself. I couldn't agree with you more. 2 million to 20, 40, 50. We don't care. We want to help people. Leland, I'll say it again. Leland Smith, Dave Guy, these are like, just reach out to people. Yeah. Everybody wants everybody to improve. It's good for the industry. It's good for what we're doing. It's, you know, it helps you and your staff. Totally agree. Don't be too proud. Just call us.
Perfect. I'm gonna finish with one question. I think we're probably about an hour and 10 minutes in. And this has been fantastic, guys. So thank you so much. There's a lot of little nuggets in here that are simple things that you can't say, I don't have the money to do that. So you can't use that excuse. But last question, this one is geared towards you, Leland. What do you want your legacy to be? I was asked this question one time, and I was like, I can't even see what that looks like just yet. But it really got me thinking about it at 40 years old, 42 now. But what do you want your legacy to be?
I think my feeling is that I help people. And I didn't get where I am today without people helping me. And I'm still learning. I'm still getting advice. I'm still getting help. But I like to think people that I've changed their lives in some fashion. Either I've made them millionaires or I've made their staff have a better life. Just giving back. And I think I've always given back because I was always given to. And
That's good.
When I'm said and done, I just want people to have a good thought. It goes, yeah, he helped me.
He was a good guy.
Yeah.
And he helped me. Well, that's pretty simple the way when you say it, but it's actually not simple at all, because there's a lot to that. Well, and you, you know, it's not lip service. And I think that, like Paul was saying, you know, you've never heard a bad thing about Leland Smith. And that's true. And I never heard anything. I had never met.
You haven't talked to my wife yet.
now when you guys are going to get to talk to, you know, Anna later, don't be asking these questions about me. But, you know, I appreciate what you've done for the industry, both of you. And I appreciate, you know, our long-term friendship and our new friendship, you know, and I'm super grateful for those things. And when you guys came to Rhino X, you sharing, you know, it means a lot to me. It means a lot to the industry. I think it's, you do what you say you're going to do. And you are genuinely trying to help everyone, which is why you took the time. There was no real gain for you coming here. I didn't pay you to come here. You came on your own time to share your message. And again, I appreciate that.
I would say to the people that are looking to invest, bring on investors, there's no wrong investor. Ken Haynes, Ken Goodrich, Dave Geiger's group, all good guys. I mean, nothing's wrong. You just got to figure out what's best for you because they're all good people. They all have best intentions for you. They're not going to mess you up. You just got to make a decision.
Yeah.
So everybody's a winner.
And ask all the questions.
Yes. Don't be shy.
You know, I'll finish with this too, and it's cool to kind of understand some of the similarities we have. It actually makes me feel good about the business that I'm running. But when we do interviews with people, not that I get to do many interviews anymore, we look at them as who are you as a human being, and then what are your skill sets professionally. Ryan, you're new. Remember when I did get to interview you? I asked you a lot of questions about who you are as a human being. First, I wanted to know who you are, what kind of guy you are. Similar to what you guys have done. And then if you're a B, a C skill set, we can work on that. But the human being aspect of this business is still, to me, like the most important piece. This, you got to want to do business with who you want to do business with. It's got to be fun. You want to do it with your friends. You want to do it with your
buddies. That's the key. It's got to be fun.
Got to make you happy.
I enjoy it every day.
Well, I appreciate you guys both so much, Frank, Leland, coming on here, sharing your message. Hopefully we'll get you guys back on again at another point in time too, to hit on some other topics as we go along. Hopefully you guys will be open to that.
Love to.
So appreciate you guys both coming on the show.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
Hey, man.
Paul,
appreciate
good to
it.
Talk to you guys again, and we appreciate you having us in.
Listeners.
Thank you.
If you listen, you're still here because you know you're hanging on, like the words that these guys are saying, they got it right. This is sometimes can be as simple, but if you're like, hey, wait, I need to understand more, do exactly as they asked, reach out, connect with them. You might want to give it a couple days. Because I know how it goes after these podcasts is, you know, they already get bombarded with emails, but you know, hang in there, you know, and listen, persistence matters, right? So if you email once, maybe email a second time.
Right.
I learned that early on in business. So, but again, listeners, we appreciate you so much. It's guests like these guys that come on that have made this thing so unbelievably popular of a podcast. And Paul and I are both grateful because we learn just as much as you learn. And we were able to apply those things towards our business. And so, you know, part of the thing that Paul and I really love is the reviews that come in from the podcast. It's really what reassures us that we're doing a good job with this and that our guests are delivering great content. So I want to share one real quick before we go. And this is from Oscar Dia 21, whoever that is. Oscar Dia says, 5 stars, amazing guests and great content. So I don't read these things ahead of time, just so you guys know.
This is great.
So here we go. It takes me almost 2 hours to cut my grass. First off,
brutal.
Cutting grass is awful. You know, you're from the Midwest.
Yeah.
Thank you. It took me 2 hours to cut my grass, but I look forward to it every weekend because I get to sit on my ride on mower and listen to, that's way easier. I had a push mower, ride on mower and listen to these amazing interviews that inspire, teach and fuel my desire to build something great. I don't know how you managed to pull off all these key people to come on your podcast, but please keep at it because they really do help. Thank you, Chris and Tall Paul. P.S. I tell my 3 kids, Samuel, Edward, and Catalina, bedtime stories of characters that resemble their personalities. In most of these stories, there are other characters. One of them is named Tall Paul, named after yours truly. Sadly, in the stories, Tall Paul happens to be the school bully.
Oh, boy, Paul.
Not That's tracking. Like the exact opposite of you. The school bully that always gets in trouble for being mean. So, Tall Paul, I hope you don't mind me using your name to teach my kids lessons about being nice to people. God bless. Thank you so much for those reviews. Guys, again, thank you so much, Tall Paul. See, that just made your day. Somebody's telling bedtime stories involving Tall Paul. Paul is not the school bully. Paul is most likely the one who wants to talk through the problems with you. And
That's right.
But we appreciate you guys so much. Keep listening. And until next time, take care. Listeners, thank you so much again for listening to this podcast week after week. We are extremely grateful. Again, the whole purpose of this podcast is to give back to the home services industry that we love so much, whether you're a rhino or not. We really, really appreciate all the subscribers. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please go in and subscribe and you'll get all the episodes sent to you automatically weekly. Also, we have really enjoyed your feedback. It's so meaningful for us when we get to read the nice comments that you guys put. So keep doing that. And if you don't know how to do it, here's what you got to do. You search for To The Point Home Services on Apple Podcasts. You click on our profile, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and hit write a review. And be honest and share your story and how the podcast has impacted you and your business. Thanks again from the bottom of our hearts at To The Point Home Services Podcast. We appreciate you.